This is Tessa from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This talk was recorded live at DFTB 18. Enjoy the show.
Like a lot of the good presentations that have been happening at this conference, I'm going to begin with a story. I was in final year med school. The school had organised for women to come in for us to practice a speculum examination on. Being a woman myself, I know that this is not a comfortable examination at all. And I was really, really nervous because I'd never performed it before. I went into the room and I began the examination. Midway through, I hear the instructor yelling, "Stop! Stop! You're hurting her!" I froze. The instructor came over and without any corrective advice, finished the examination. I kept it together just long enough to profusely apologise to the patient. I walked out of the room, left the building, called my husband and said, "I will never perform one of those again." Fast forward 6 months, I'm an intern in the emergency department. I've managed to avoid thus far any speculum examinations that have come my way. But today, I'm presenting to the consultant regarding this woman, and to my absolute horror, he says, "She'll need a spec exam." I try and reason with him. "Can obs and gynae come down?" "No, you can perform it." I'm really lucky that I have a good relationship with this consultant, and I let him know about what's happened and the fact that I don't feel like I have confidence to do this procedure. He's kind and empathetic. He says, "Laurie, you can do it. Let's go through it." We sit down before and we go through the procedure. He troubleshoots me through the possibilities that might go wrong. We go into the room, he stays with me and makes sure both myself and the patient remains comfortable. Afterwards, we sit down. He asks me, "Laurie, what went well?" I explained I was coming from a very low level, so it pretty much all went well. But then he asks me, "What would you improve on next time?" We have a chat and we make a plan that I'll perform the examination again before my rotation ends. I tell you this story to demonstrate to you two very different feedback experiences and the very different outcomes that came about. One made me feel motivated to learn and to practice. The other demoralized and made me feel like I just couldn't do it. I also tell you the story to demonstrate the immense power that feedback has. We know that it can impact behavior and it can lead to reinforcement or modification of practice. It can also influence cognition and help a learner to reconstruct knowledge and motivate them for future learning. It also enhances performance, and that's at every level, including consultancy. But it also has a dark side, and feedback given unskillfully can demoralize, demotivate, and actually lead to deterioration in performance. So I have my friend Spidey up there, whose Uncle Ben said to him, "With great power comes great responsibility." And if we have something as powerful as feedback, then I think it's really important to learn how to use it effectively. And we're really lucky because the literature tells us that it is a skill that can be learned. And a recent randomized control trial showed that faculty instituting something as little as a 1 hour program on how to give feedback improved the feedback quality in simulated cases. So how do we build the skill of giving effective feedback? Well, like so many things in medicine, we turn to the literature and the science to inform us. And there are three main themes that come out. A, we really need to understand what is effective feedback and giving effective feedback. B, we need to understand the learner. And C, and potentially most importantly, we actually need to build a learning culture which promotes giving feedback as well as promotes feedback-seeking behaviour, essentially a culture that normalises feedback. How do we begin to build this culture? Well, let's start at the bottom. What is effective feedback? Eric Parslow, who is the coach and the head of the Oxford School of Coaching and Mentoring, says that feedback is the fuel that drives performance. In essence, it's what helps us bridge the gap between actual performance and desired performance. So for instance, if I'm learning how to do a neonatal cannula and I just can't get it in, I have three options. I can use the neonate as a pincushion, which is probably not the best idea, or the faculty can institute an observed learning and formal feedback process. But if that's not available to me, I can seek feedback and ask someone to watch me do it and give me advice. Go in on a different angle, make sure you use a tourniquet, choose a smaller cannula. And that way I can reach the desired performance of being able to get that cannula in. To close the circle, it's also really important that I have another opportunity to be able to implement that advice that's been given. What are the elements of effective feedback that help us build a feedback culture? There are two lines of thought. Firstly, we have to look at what the effective feedback characteristics are. So you see my friend, the puppy there. He's demonstrating that feedback needs to be really behaviorally specific. When we say, bad dog, we point to what we want the dog to learn not to do. Look at the toilet paper, please don't ruin it. Similarly and interestingly, feedback such as good job is also not behaviorally specific. It makes us feel warm and fuzzy, but doesn't actually tell us what behavior to reinforce. So for instance, something like saying, while you palpated that abdomen, I saw that you looked at the patient's face and was able to see whether or not they were in pain. That lets the person know that that behaviour should carry on to the next person and reinforces it. Feedback should be frequent and expected, and that way it becomes part of a normalised culture. How frequent? The literature's not so clear. There's this one study that's shown that weekly directed observation as well as formal feedback help residents feel more confident in their clinical skills. Feedback needs to be timely. It should happen as short as possible after the observed event. It also needs to be in an appropriate setting. So for instance, corrective feedback is best given in a private setting, whereas other feedback may actually be helped if given in front of patients or colleagues who can participate in the feedback process. In terms of the learner, feedback needs to be something that promotes self-reflection. We know from studies that self-reflection and self-assessment is how learners create goals, and it also creates learner buy-in, so they're less likely to take that feedback negatively. There are a lot of challenges in the healthcare setting to being able to implement a feedback culture. From a feedback-giving perspective, we can lack confidence. It's a skill that we're just not taught. We're taught to be doctors or nurses or allied health professionals, but we're not always taught how to be educators and managers, and that needs to be considered. We can be concerned about damaging healthcare professional relationships. We could just lack time or not have the appropriate environment in order to give it. And then there's the feedback receiver. I don't think I'd be wrong to say that there are a lot of type A personalities in this field, and that can lead to defensiveness and anger, which stops effective feedback from being taken on board. For juniors, there can also be a real concern about career progression and the fact that corrective feedback means that they're just not good enough and that they can't progress. So how do we overcome these barriers and make sure that we implement the tools of effective feedback? Frameworks are one option that we can use, and I'd like us to have a think about two particular frameworks by using a scenario. So I'll ask you guys to close your eyes, not just because I'm going to read the scenario, but also to have a real think about what I'm about to say. Here's the scenario. You've directly observed your intern for the first half of the rotation. It has reached midterm and you are required to give feedback. Of note, your intern takes a good history, particularly including system reviews. You find that they appropriately escalate care and ask for help for deteriorating patients, just last week calling a Met call for hypotension. Lately, you've noted that on admissions day, they appear increasingly stressed, leading to a hurried communication style with staff, which you're concerned may come off as rudeness. How are you going to approach this? You can open your eyes. The first model I'll go through is called Pendleton's model. Pendleton's model, I'll go through the model and then we'll see how we can make it work with the scenario. So Pendleton's model first says that, number one, you should clarify any facts you're not sure of. Number two, you should ask the feedback giver if they're ready for feedback. Then you ask what went well and engage in a conversation about what went well, adding to it as you see fit. Then you ask what could be improved and add to the conversation about what could be improved. Lastly, but most importantly, you come up with an action plan to ensure that improvement and performance can be had. So thinking about our scenario, it's quite obvious of what went well, but again, it's really important to be behaviourally specific. So I said that they give a good history and specifically they do a good systems review. It would be a matter of highlighting that a systems review helps us with ensure that we don't miss differential diagnoses, reinforcing the behaviour about why we would want to do that. When it comes to the more corrective feedback, we've got to have a think. We've given the learner actually an opportunity to self-reflect, and it might come up in the conversation, making it a lot easier to explore. But if it doesn't, it's perfectly okay to also bring it up, ensuring that, again, we specify and we're behaviourally specific about how we bring it up. So it's a very different conversation to say, I've noticed that during busy times, your communication style appears more hurried versus you become stressed and angry and it impacts the team. It's two very different styles, and one is much more likely to induce defensiveness than the other. The other important aspect about giving feedback is to have a dialogue and a conversation. We know that bi-directional feedback promotes less feelings of negativity and also the feeling of bi-directional growth, professional growth, that I can gain something and you can gain something too. And it's also much more likely to be taken on board. Some of the issues with Pendleton's model is it's very prescriptive, and sometimes that can prevent a good conversation flow. So another model that can be used is called the set-go model. In this model, the S and the E stands for saying what you saw in the observed action. So what did you see? What else did you see? And it's really important in this section to ensure that you're descriptive, non-judgmental, and specific. The T stands for think. You ask the intern, what do you think about this observed behaviour and this observed actions? The G stands for goal. And it's not what are your goals, it's what are our goals. Again, promoting this bi-directional feedback, which promotes mutual growth. The O stands for offer. This is where you get to use your expertise and offer advice on how we can achieve those goals. I've gone through a few models, but there are many more, and there are also a lot more tips and tricks that are available to giving feedback effectively. The PMCV website and this particular website is a great resource and a great help, both on how to give feedback effectively, but also how to receive it effectively to make sure that it is something that helps enhance our performance. I'm coming towards the end of my presentation, and there were three things that I really hope that you can take out of it. Number one, feedback is powerful. but it's also a skill that can be learnt, both giving and receiving it. Number two, it enhances performance, and structures and frameworks can help us give it effectively. And number three, and perhaps most importantly, it's really important for us to try and generate a feedback culture and one where we feel comfortable both receiving and giving feedback to help within our learning. On that note, I'm going to read an excerpt from a systematic review that's going to be made available on Twitter that really highlights the importance of this learning culture. In the interplay between feedback across a variety of disciplines, medicine, athletics, musical performance, the most dynamic variable in the equation that determines the significance of feedback to the learner is the learning culture in which the interaction occurs. The learning culture defines the expectations of the teacher-learner relationship, establishes norms for routine feedback interactions, and helps anchor feedback in measurable performance goals. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Laurie. You must have an amazing consultant when you're an intern.
I expect feedback.
So I think I've got a question for you, first of all. In the emergency department, we run constantly against a battle of a four-hour target. How do you think we can actually provide an effective feedback and learning culture when we're constantly trying to meet time-based goals to treat our patients?
It's really difficult, but it doesn't have to be something that takes a long time. And at the end of the day, I think it actually makes things more time efficient, because if you're able to give feedback then and there, that person is able to do the job better for the next patient. So whilst it can be seen as a time-consuming thing, I think if you are able to give it and put aside the time and realise that actually at the end of the day, it will make processes more efficient.
Thanks. And Becky, anything from Twitter there? Excellent. Anyone got any questions from the floor for Laurie? Any comments?
Yeah, so I wonder, do you get to do upward feedback?
Oh, no, you just get a printout
of everything. Yeah. So the literature actually says that that's quite problematic for a lot of reasons. It's not timely or specific, so you're not really sure how to change your behaviours or when that happened. And the other thing is it's not interactive at all, so you don't get to have a conversation and form goals in order to change any behaviours. So I would suggest that that's not necessarily a good way to go about things. But feedback-seeking behaviour is really important as well. So if you were to get feedback and you had a coach or mentor that you could discuss that with, the literature really supports the positive effect that has in being able to work through those issues and enhance performance, essentially.